Chariot Solutions TechCast number 52, Peter Neubauer on the Graph Database Neo4j. Neo4j is a non-SQL database that expresses relationships using graphs of objects. The project is written in 100% pure Java, and according to my guest, Peter Neubauer, can scale to reach billions of nodes and can access data in deep queries in a matter of a few milliseconds. I talked to Peter about Neo4j, how it's architected differently than a traditional relational database, accessing it through programming languages and various tools. By the way, if you're going to PyCon this week, one of the talks will be Tobias Iverson speaking about using the Python programming language against the database engine. Today's episode of the TechCast is brought to you from the Emerging Technology for the Enterprise Conference, coming up on April 8th and 9th in beautiful and hopefully warmer Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. From Agile to Rails, Clojure to Scala, and Cloud to Mobile Computing, our show pretty much has it all. Register now by hitting phillyemergingtech.com. I'm here today with Peter Neubauer, the developer of the Neo4j database project. Hi, Peter.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
And we're talking to you all the way from Sweden. Whereabouts in Sweden are you located?
We are located in Malmö, which is in southern Sweden, right across the Öresund from Copenhagen. So that's the southern border of Sweden.
Mm-hmm. What's your weather like there today?
Well, it's 5 degrees minus, and it has been cold for I don't know how long. It's like the coldest winter ever, it feels like.
We have the same problem in the east of the United States. It's just snow, and it's really cold. So hope spring comes for both of us. So let's talk a little bit about you and a little bit of your background, and then you can kind of talk a little bit about the fact that you've been working on this Neo4j for a while.
Yeah, so to start with, we started working on the content management system back in 98. And when we did that, we built on the Informix Universal Database, the Informix Universal Server, because that had some capabilities of, you know, image search and extending the database. Eventually, we came over a little plugin that did storing for the WordNet translations and the synonym and that kind of database. And it turned out this was actually a network stored in the database, and we like the ability to be able to ask that networks for stuff. So eventually, having all these requirements changing rapidly all the time, we came to the conclusion, why not model our data as a network? If we put it on the whiteboard as a network, why can't we store it as a network? So we tried that out, and it worked out that stored procedures in a database are not what you want to build. So
yeah.
So we started out building a classic Java Enterprise application on top of a relational database, Postgres at that time. After we were done after a couple of months, it turned out to have a transaction speed of 2 transactions a second.
That'll do it. Yeah.
Yeah, so we realized pretty quickly that this is a very nice API, but it's not going to cut it. So we went off to build our next prototype. At that time, the bubble was bursting and money was not around anymore. And basically, our company that we worked in went bankrupt. So we anyway. And build a second iteration. The company got up again, and we continued. Eventually, we based it on Berkeley DB as the backend, but it turned out that even that was not as fast as we would like to have it. So in 2003, we finished our third version of the database layer, and that was with a custom Java non-blocking IO-based backend that didn't put any constraints on IO speed and transaction security and so on. So 2003, the first version of the of what is now Neo4j went into production. And since then, it has been in production before we spun out the company with the base technology in 2007 from our mother company.
Okay. So now it's version 1.0 of Neo4j is the current release. So have you been in point release all that time?
Yeah, we have. When we were inside our mother company, it was not an issue to have versions on that because we did like software as a service business. So we just fixed bug and improved the product. When we spun it out, we had it in 0.2 because we are open source guys from the beginning and we like to have really stable APIs.
Mm-hmm.
So the main point was that we were not prepared to commit to the API of Neo4j. That was the main point, not stability or maturity. So today we released 1.0 in a state where we are prepared to stand for the APIs.
Okay. So, and we'll get into the APIs in a bit, but you have a number of ways to get data in and out of this database and communicate with it. You know, we've had some people on from different NoSQL databases before. What is your case for why relational model databases don't suit what you are working with?
Well, I guess we are a bit of a foreigner when it comes to the view on the relational model. We actually like the relational model from a theoretical point of view. We like transactions. We like consistent data. We like full modeling and full normalization of data. The thing is that for our use cases we had and we are increasingly seeing, the performance and the deep querying of data is a serious problem for us. The performance of SQL statements that span several joins are just killing us. We were experiencing that back in the days when we had consultants in trying to optimize queries that span more than four joins, and they simply said it was not possible. We've been trying to bang our head against that without any success when we needed much deeper and much smarter analytics of our data.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not primarily focusing on the scaling out aspect initially of the data, which is a big issue for many of the NoSQL databases. I mean, the majority of key value stores and document databases comes from a world where you have a lot of data and you do trade-offs in your data model to be able to introduce sharding along key values or documents or columns or other constructs, so you have a clear path to sharding on several machines. Our problems came from the analytics and from the handling of that data point of view. So we can morph the graph, of course, into a shardable structure, but we think that what we handle right now in data and what we can handle on uncharted graphs is enough for 95% of the problems we're trying to solve.
So now you call your database a graph database. So it sounds like when we talk graph, we talk about relationships between things. So although it might not be SQL relational, it is still a relationship setup, correct?
Yes, absolutely. We're talking about complex data, deeply and densely connected points of data. And that is actually one of the points. We're believing that the graph is the big other data model beside the relational model of COD that is able to fully normalize and persist a data structure without duplication of values and duplication of data. So, and we are seeing pretty big movements going that direction. The whole semantic web movement is all about mapping data onto triples, which is basically edges and nodes in a graph. Even Tim Berners-Lee talks about the giant global graph. What we are doing is to build a backend that performantly can query, store, and retrieve that information.
So who are the founders? So it's you and a number of other people who work on Neo4j. Who are the key people that work on this project?
Well, the absolute key people are our developers, But from the beginning, we have been three guys being deeply involved in the first sketches and the first iterations of Neo4j. That is Emil Efring, our current CEO, then John Svensson, who is our CTO and core kernel hacker that does all the nitty-gritty loading transaction and that kind of stuff. And then me, who was CTO at the company where we first iterated Neo4j and is now doing community sales, marketing, and operational stuff. Besides that, we have a number of very, very good people. We are currently eight people plus always a number of other people, but a number of very skilled engineers that are hacking away with us.
So are you doing Neo4j? It's completely open source, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
And what's your license that you're working on with that?
We are having the AGPL version, which means that for open source stuff, Neo4j is completely open. Even for commercial stuff, Neo4j is completely open. The main thing is if you close your source to your users, then you need another license, which is the commercial license with Neo technology that we provide. We have a number of customers that are actually building, for instance, web services that are commercial, but the source is available. They're providing hosting, packaging, and so on. And that is nothing you need a license from us for.
Right, if you close your own source, then.
That is the main trigger point, yes. It's not the commercial side of things. You can take paid for open source software, no problem.
Well, let's talk a little bit about using Neo4j. So I'm a developer. I have a Java application, and I feel that I want to use Neo4j to persist data in this manner. So what would I do? How would I approach it?
In the very simplest and easiest form, you would just, as you go to any other embedded database, you would use Neo4j in an embedded mode, which means you have a direct Java API to it, and it runs in your application process. That means that you, in principle, are starting a new embedded graph database, and then you're accessing the graph via the Neo4j API, which is very, very much and close inspired by the Java collection API. So you can think of it like a deep collection API. Then the real powerful part of it is the traversal of graph structures. So that is where we have done an iterator-like API that can go from a node deep into the graph and then return nodes along certain evaluation options that you can implement, like as interfaces. So you can express your graph traversals as Java code.
So almost like navigation logic, almost like if you can consider it a query, here's a pathway to get to the data I'm looking for. Is that what we're talking about?
Exactly. It's not exactly a pathway. We have Gremlin for that we're probably going to talk about later. But in Java, we provide a kind of an interface-based traversal. You give a instruction or a class that partly will decide when to stop iterating over nodes and relationships, and partly what to include in the result set. So that's how you encode this. The advantage of that is that it's compiled, it's very fast, and it's type-safe. We like type-safeness, at least in Java.
Okay, so in embedded mode, you've got some basic, I guess, flat file, or I shouldn't call it flat, but a file system basically stored somewhere on a server that's directly being written read to from your application. How about if you want to scale this up? So you want to put it on a large enough node of computers to handle a very large load. What do you do there?
We handle the box graphs of about 12 billion nodes, relationships, and properties. Then we have made a trade-off of using integers for the primary keys of these nodes, relationships, and properties, which are our primitives. Above that, we are right now working on introducing longs as the like ID space, which will give you basically unlimited graph sizes. It's a trade-off between disk I/O and shuffling things around for lower key architectures, since we are asset-based. In the read scale-out scenario, we have a number of different things. We have online backup, which gives you a cold spare or a hot spare if you want. We are just about to release now, after our 1.0 release, what we call Poorman's high availability, where you have one write slave and a number of read masters that will be eventually consistent with the write master. And after that, we will work on real high availability, which means all the machines in the cluster will replicate the data from a write master. If even the write master goes down, the rest of the machines will vote on a new write master. So we eliminate that single point of potential failure also.
Okay, but also what you're telling me is, in an application with a decent sized server, Neo4j can handle load probably what, faster than a relational database?
Absolutely. We have normal working performance of about 2,000 hops in a network per millisecond. That is about between 1 and 2 million nodes, for instance, that you can touch in a traversal per second. So from there, you can basically go over your graph algorithm and see, okay, how many nodes do I need to touch to get my query executed. For instance, if you think of file tree, we have customers, for instance, having the problem of activity streams, which is a typical problem in a LAMP stack, where we have to replicate activities onto different users' tables. So one activity results in a number of writes, say a couple of thousand writes in the database, which kills it. They want to turn that into read load with a graph data, it's like Neo4j. But then you want to, for instance, traverse a whole file tree of, say, 40,000 folders and 400,000 files and dynamically calculate their sizes to give the user a summary of how big that folder is. That is a traversal that runs in about like 100 milliseconds in Neo4j.
I'm just thinking what you would take with correlated subqueries and God knows what in a relational database to figure something like that out, even if you could represent it.
Yes, that's the main problem. You can't even execute that query.
Yeah, it's those fishhook diagrams. Remember when you're doing relational stuff, you had the key that depends on another key of the same table?
The main point in Neo4j is that since the storage and the execution layer is built around a network, Neo4j behaves in practice like a multi-dimensional linked list with the caching and everything attached. So traversals along the edges are a constant time operation. They're independent of the size of the network. In a relational database, every join is basically a set matching query between the IDs of one table that are stored in an index and the IDs, the primary keys of another table. So for every hop, you have to join, and increasing size of data will kill that join, the performance of join. So as data grows, your query is going to be slower and slower and slower. Neo4j does not have that problem.
So I saw there was a blog post, and we can link to it, I guess, 10 ways to learn to get to know Neo4j. And in one of those, you mentioned Ruby support. So you have support for a bunch of different languages, right? You got Ruby, you got Python.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. Python, we have Tobias Iverson, who will be presenting at PyCon in a couple of days, who is maintaining the Python bindings, which are very cool with Django integration and so on. We have very, very beautiful Ruby integrations with support for Active Record and migrations and all sorts of cool stuff, Ruby and Rails support. Maintained by Andreas Ronge, who's based in Malmö too, at JWay, a very good consultancy agency in Scandinavia. Then we have Scala bindings, which we're quite excited about. And as of some weeks ago, we have been starting to add REST support on the core Node.js components with Jim Weber from ThoughtWorks, so we get a real expressive and cacheable and etext-based REST interface app that is worth the name.
The 4J, I assume, originally came from 4Java. What is Neo4j run on? Is it a Java-based platform? Is it another language you took advantage of to write this?
No, it's purely Java-based. We are not leaving the JVM anywhere, so there's no native code involved. We're trusting the JVM to be good, which is sometimes a problem, especially the tweaking of the garbage collectors. In highly production and concurrent scenarios, you have to be able to tweak the garbage collection. That is our main, I would say, concern about using Java. Otherwise, Java is performing very, very well. We are getting very good results, and we are very happy to use it. So we run basically everywhere where Java runs. We have even Neo4j running on Android phones, for instance.
No kidding.
Which is quite cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just 500K are big, so it runs right off the phone.
In terms of memory, like on an average application, how big do you think the VMs generally run on average for making, you know, processing Neo4j? I mean, do you add a couple hundred megabytes to the VM to handle it on a regular load, or is it not that much?
It does depend. Neo4j is very graceful with the load, so it will not throw out of memory exceptions. It will degrade performance as it starts to swap out and in nodes and relationships from the database caches. So it will run slower. As a measure of guide measure, we recently had a social network running on 550 million relationships and 60 million nodes, which is users, and a couple of properties on each. That was running in about 32 gigabytes of RAM, caching everything, both in the file layer and in the caching layer. So you ran at in RAM speeds there.
Mm-hmm. So you literally are running a machine, a VM that has 32 gigs, but you're probably getting almost instant performance.
Yes, exactly. Then a Dijkstra or shortest path of depth 3 takes about 10 milliseconds.
So tools to use Neo4j and query Neo4j. I saw something in there. There's an Eclipse project to view these graphs, for example. So what kind of tools would you recommend people look at to start experimenting with Neo4j in terms of maybe looking at the data, manipulating the data, in addition to the programming APIs?
The Java API is, of course, what we would prefer most. Increasingly, people are trying to experiment and test out Neo kind of easier accessible platforms. Ruby is one of them. JRuby is very easy to install. You just do gem install Neo4j, and then off you go. You write your little Ruby script and can do all your tests there. We have a couple of tools to look at an existing database. As you mentioned, NeoClips is a Eclipse RCP-based application that shows you the graphical layout of things. We have a Neo4j shell that is like a command line shell, and it is very Unix-oriented. It can actually pipe things, and you can do like ls, which is listing things off a node, and cd5 is positioning you on the node with ID5, and so on and so on. As of lately, I've been involved in starting a project around graphs as such, property graphs as such, which is called Gremlin. That one is defining a superset of graph properties and graph models that fits a lot of graphs, not only Neo4j. It fits RDF, it fits Allegro Graph, it fits a number of other projects out there. And on that, Gremlin provides an XPath-based interface to traverse and manipulate the graph, which is very, very intuitive for web-like people and very tempting to embed in, for instance, PHP code and that kind of stuff.
Now, we mentioned the social graph and semantic web. We interviewed Brian Sletten about the semantic web, I guess, a couple weeks ago. So are some semantic web-based projects using Neo4j right now? And in what way would you hook it in? It sounds like basically you could just hook into a network model and query deeply into Neo4j from it, correct? With Sparkwool or something like that?
Yes. A couple of our components wrap the raw graph. Neo4j is really concerned about the raw graph with Spark and RDF compatible layers. They turn the graph into a RDF triple store and implement the SAIL API, the SysOmni SAIL API. We have a couple of different models on projecting triples, which the SAIL API and the RDF community is mainly concerned with, onto the graph. In all cases, we really construct a graph that has subjects as nodes, predicates as relationships, and objects, if they are not literals, as nodes again. That means when you do a Sparkle query, we transform it actually into a traverser and will fetch these things along the edges of the network. So in other triple stores, you basically keep triples in a couple of tables and then do set operations on them, which the SAIL API is very an obvious example on that. You do like SQL-based querying. What we do is different. We try to find subgraphs in a graph structure that you have an example of in your RDF query.
So you don't end up doing set type of operations on it?
No, we try to avoid it.
Yeah.
We have, of course, indexing, which we might talk about a bit later. But we try to see things as non-set-based operations. So Neo4j performs, when it comes to RDF storage, really, really well when it comes to deeper queries, complex queries with a lot of subgraph depth. In shallow queries, I would say we are as good as any other RDF store out there. When you have more logic to it, you should use Neo4j definitely.
You know, you just rolled out this release. What's on deck for your future releases?
Well, a highly demanded feature for us is, of course, the high availability. That is almost done, but we need to release it. So the only thing that was higher on prior was 1.0.
Yeah, it's understandable.
Yeah, exactly. After that, we are on our way to provide support for more support for the REST API. We have a couple of very cool things in store there, like shooting over and mounting JavaScript traversers. So you can like put a traverser in JavaScript and then provide a REST template for it. So what you get back is a URL where you can shoot in parameters to configure that traverser. So the traverser is done server-side at the server. It's like stored procedures in JavaScript for Neo4j REST server, right? And another exciting thing that we are working on the horizon is, of course, to make the graph bigger and to start working on sharding the graph. That is the holy grail of graph databases, of course. It's not trivial, and in many circumstances, you can't really short the graph. There is no auto sharding for graphs because it's domain specific. But you can provide different models of sharding. You can provide knobs and levers to pull to make it easier to determine where your sharding opportunities are. For instance, to turn your graph into a document store and only have, say, weak links between the documents. There's nothing preventing you from it. But yeah, to provide a balance between replicating part of the data into different shards and hard sharding, which is share nothing. So it will hopefully be a solution that is a seamless integration between replication and hard sharding, and you can pull your levers along, like kind of the hotspot optimization of the sharding.
For people to learn more about Neo4j, was it neo4j.org, or what's your website?
Yeah, that's neo4j.org. The commercial side of it is neotechnology.com, but we really like to focus on the open source side. So we encourage you to go to neo4j.org.
So Peter Neubauer, thank you so much for being on the TechCast and talking about Neo4j today.
Thank you for having me here.
Thanks again to Peter Neubauer for approaching us about Neo4j and coming on the show to talk about it. You can find out about the open source Neo4j database by visiting neo4j.org. That's neo4j.org. I've also posted a few links in the show notes to help you continue your own research. Don't forget to get your tickets to the Philly Emerging Tech Show. We're at least halfway to our capacity, and it isn't even March yet. And the cost is so low, you really can't go wrong. Register today at phillyemergingtech.com. If you're new to the show, check out our weekly DevCast, where we bring you updated news about things we're interested in. Find out more at techcast.chariotsolutions.com. Our themes are Free Theme No. 3 and 4 from podcastthemes.com. For the TechCast, I'm Ken Rimple.